Welcome to Us and My Mice.
Love you and I, cause I love you so much.
Oh, 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 I just love you.
I just like help, help.
I just like help.
I just like you too.
I just like you.
I just love you.
Happy New Year,
I love you, say goodbye.
You're going to school,
and that's okay.
Yum, 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 I just love you.
Welcome back to Be Well by April. So today is a very special day because not only is it International Nutrition Day, so Registered Dietitian and Nutritionist Day, but it is also International Women's Day, and this month is a month of many firsts, mainly because this is the same month that I started my nutrition business, and I'm just going to give you a little background for those of you who might be new to the show. So my journey to becoming a nutritionist isn't exactly conventional compared to others in this field. So I became a nutritionist during my year in diabetes, as I call it. So for those of you who don't know, my show is mainly surrounded with diabetes, the subject of diabetes, I should say, because in February 2022, I nearly went into a diabetic coma due to diabetic ketoacidosis, and being on the hospital bed, I had made it my mission to basically, educate and empower the public on type 2 diabetes and prevention, and little did I know that I would become infatuated with the anatomy and nutrition based on, basically women's health and diabetes. And I kind of wish I had stuck with my chemistry degree at the beginning of college, because I consider myself both left and right brained, and I also geek out over neuroscience and nutrition in relation to each other. So the most difficult part of studying for my chemistry degree at the time was staying focused. So I was an all-girls Catholic high school girl prodigy, so boys were a distraction. I had a boyfriend my freshman year who I spent a lot of time with, and it turns out he was just narcissistically abusive. And three tips that I tell women all the time, regardless if they're interested in nutrition in a career or not, or at least in a STEM-related field, are: one, please don't quit on your dream. Two, take advantage of every opportunity you can to make yourself visible and credible. And by all means, be a joiner. Join as many clubs as you can. And this can be anything from a continuing medical education, certification, or a course on edX. So I got my CME from Stanford University School of Medicine and Food and Health, and I plan on getting another CME in diabetes from Harvard. And finally, find yourself a mentor whom you can confide in, ask questions, pick their brain to find out how to excel further in your industry. And what's interesting about nutrition and the field of medicine at large is that I'm not fazed by male dominance. In fact, I'm lucky enough to have a supportive boyfriend who is always a text away, and also friends in the industry. And I don't believe in blackmail, nor do I believe in talking badly about my male peers. I know when I was in elementary school, I was constantly bullied by my classmates, my male classmates. However, I And like now it's kind of the opposite, but I'll get into that later. But at the end of the day, we're all just trying to get our job done and make differences in other people's lives. So with that said, a piece of advice that every female STEM student should follow is to create balance as well as consuming as much literature as you possibly can. So how does a female STEM student create balance? So block out days and times you are going to dedicate to studying, and for Pete's sakes, make studying a priority for you along with the necessary self-care. And do homework during the week so you have the weekends to be free to do whatever your little heart desires. And unfortunately, when you transition from high school to college, no one really tells you what to expect in terms of course or homework load or anything else for that matter until it's practically too late for your brain to process it. So that's basically my two cents on how I got into nutrition. And Mary, what is your favorite part of being a woman in society?
Okay. I'm going to change this a little bit for you. So
sure.
Here's the best part of the military. Or the way it used to be. You're not a man, you're a woman. Not a woman, you're a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't look at myself as the feminist movement. I didn't join the military because, you know, I had to be the girl and do everything else like that.
Okay.
I struggled a lot with being a girl in the sense that, you know, I grew up in a very old-fashioned household. I was raised by my grandmother for most of my life that didn't progress past the 50s. So, you know, I was raised that the woman's job is to cook, clean, take care of the kids, be a housewife. So she could never figure out where she went wrong with me.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so,
yeah.
You know, I joined and did what I did because it was something that I wanted to do. You know, for me, it's just being a mom, not so much a woman, but being a mom to be able to relate and show other moms, because there's so many misconceptions out there. You know, you have to pick your family or your career. You can't have both. And if you have both, how do you juggle it all? And that's where I struggled at first, but you have to learn to make time for everything. Figure out what's so important, what's the most important things in your life at that time. You know, and that's where, for me, my career is at home, working online. So I can have my career, but I can still be home with my kids. I set my schedule. I do what I do and have that voice. But for me, it's just being able to have that voice to speak out. And that's the one thing I work with my daughter on all the time is just within reason, being respectful. Doesn't always come that way, especially with mom. Mom has mouth issues some days. But just being empowered to speak. But when you speak, because, you know, I have a hard time when it comes to the feminist movement now. Because it's not what you consider the feminist movement. When I believe in the feminist movement and the empowerment of women is the women that came before us, the Susan B. Anthony.
Mm-hmm.
And she was so much more, and things that she did was so much more than what we portray her to be. You know, you have Marie Curie, Helen Keller. They fought for awareness of situations.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't just speak to speak and to be heard and not have a purpose to do things.
Right.
Hang on one quick second.
It's okay, I'll continue. Yeah, so given that, the first Women's Right Convention met in Seneca Falls, New York, in 1848. So in July 1848, 240 men and women gathered in upstate New York for a meeting, basically to discuss the social and religious conditions of the rights of women. And 100 of the delegates, so 68 women and 32 men, you do the math, signed a Declaration of Sentiments modeled on the Declaration of Independence, declaring that women, like men, were citizens with an inalienable right to the elective franchise. And the Seneca Falls Convention marked the very beginning of the campaign for women's suffrage. And then come 1869, Wyoming territory was the first to grant women the right to vote. And in 1924, the state's voters elected the nation's first female governor, Nellie Taylor Ross. And then a Californian named Julia Morgan became the first woman admitted to a engineering school. So I obviously can't pronounce the name because it's in French. But it's actually the best architecture school in the world. And she returned to California, and there she became, I've been up since 3, thanks to my kitty, and she became the first woman licensed to practice architecture in the state and an influential champion of the arts and crafts movement. And though she is most famous for building what's called the Hearst Castle, which is a massive compound for the publisher William Randolph Hearst, so Hearst Company, meaning the publications like Cosmopolitan and all that fun stuff, all those fun publications, and then Margaret Sanger, she opened the first birth control clinic in the United States in 1916. So she was a nurse and women's rights activist, and she opened the very first American birth control clinic in Brownsville, Brooklyn. And since state Comstock laws banned contraceptives, And information about them, her clinic was technically illegal. And as a result, on October 26th of that year, so 1916, the city vice squad raided the clinic, arresting its staff and seizing its stock of diaphragms and condoms. So Sanger tried to reopen the clinic twice more, but police forced her landlord to evict her the next month, closing it for good. However, this did not stop Sanger from creating the very first American Birth Control League, which is the organization that eventually became Planned Parenthood. So that is where it came from. And then Edith Wharton, I think it was that same year, 1921, Edith Wharton is the first woman to win a Pulitzer Prize. So she won the Pulitzer Prize for her 1920 novel, The Age of Innocence. And like many of Wharton's books, The Age of Innocence was a critique on the insularity and hypocrisy of the upper class in the turn of the century New York. And funny how it's all in New York, right? And
well, you know, one, I'm going to interrupt you for a minute here because you brought up the whole thing with Planned Parenthood. Do you know why she fought so hard for birth control?
Actually, I don't, but I'm assuming it's for women's rights. But can you tell me more?
It had a lot more to do than with just women's rights. The reason why she pushed, and a few of these women pushed for birth control, was because back then women were having 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 babies.
Oh, yeah.
And they would have them one after another after another. A lot of women died.
Yeah.
In childbirth,
childbirth
or died from complications after the fact. And women had no control over it. I mean, we really, back then, you really had not much say. But it was to help these women that were exhausted and tired and couldn't handle the kids they had. And to save them from dying and taking care of their kids because they were having so many kids.
Right.
Which is misconstrued to what Planned Parenthood is today. I'm sorry, I'm against Planned Parenthood and what they do. I'm not against abortions per se. I'm just the way Planned Parenthood operates, I'm against it.
Okay, cool. And well, anyway,
and
about you,
I just
go ahead.
Not taking away from the woman that did what she did for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting conception about it because you know, I never thought about the whole childbirth thing and that becoming a huge public health issue, and being the huge public health advocate that I am. You know, that's important, especially with the overturn of Roe v. Wade in certain states here in the U.S. You know, and I have to disagree with you on some of the things that you said, because, like, I'm for Planned Parenthood, and, I mean, not to get into a whole political discussion about it. However, I do know that basically, like, it's the almost cliche version of, like, a woman's body is her choice. And, yeah, sorry, it's a little early, but, but regardless, yeah, sorry, it's early.
It is,
but
I believe it takes two, so it should be a two-person decision, not a one-person decision.
Hmm.
Personally,
what do you mean by
because, you know what? Well, if two of you did something, you resulted in something being created because it took two people, because you're not the Virgin Mary, then both people involved should have that decision on their to make, not just one exclusively without knowing.
Oh yeah, and I totally agree with you that you know, a man like shouldn't like not know that like his potential baby mama had like an abortion, but like but yeah, I mean,
no, I'm not against abortion. I'm just against women being stupid and doing it without the other person knowing about it until after the fact. I believe that two people need to talk about it and deal with it together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, sorry if I'm not being coherent. Yeah. It's just
early?
Yeah, it's just early. Yeah, but going back to and going back to Edith Wharton for a second, and not to change the subject or anything, but this book, The Age of Innocence, inspired several stage and screen adaptations. And the writer, Cicely Von Zigasar, I think that's how you say her name. I'm so sorry if I get any of these names wrong. But she said, or he, was it she or he? I think it was a she. Has said it was the model for her popular Gossip Girl series of books, which, as we all know, is the very famous, or rather infamous, Gossip Girl series on TV. And then activist Alice Paul proposed the Equal Rights Amendment for the first time in 1923. So for almost 50 years at that point, women's rights advocates like Alice Paul tried to get Congress to approve the Equal Rights Amendment. And finally, in 1972, they succeeded. And in March of that year, Congress sent the proposed amendment, and I quote, "Equality of rights under the law should not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex." And they proposed that to the states for ratification. And then 22 of the required 38 states ratified it right away. But then conservative activists mobilized against it. So the ERA's straightforward language hid all kinds of sinister threats, and they claimed that, and I quote again, it would force wives to support their husbands, send women into combat, and validate gay marriages. Mary, I'm sure you can speak to, I'm sure you can speak about that, sending women into combat.
You're not going to like my opinion.
I mean, well, we're not here to have a political discussion.
No, women in combat, if you see in the military, there's different standards. There's a standard for a woman, there's a standard for a man.
Right.
By that, your physical fitness. If you're going to do frontline combat, you need to train with men and follow the exact same standards as a man.
Right.
Not have it modified. Because here's the, when you go through boot camp, you go through training, you go through everything. Your backpack you carry weighs 110 pounds on average.
Uh-huh.
That's more than most women weigh at the time. You're young. And so the most common injury in females in the military are hip fractures.
Right.
And so our bodies are not always designed to carry and support what we do. And that's where you get a lot of the injuries afterwards. But there are a few women that can do it, and more power to you. Right before I left the military is when they started playing with the idea of women being in frontline combat. And my sergeant decided to just screw with us all. So he wakes the women up an hour before formation, sends us down to formation. We're down in formation. He goes, "All right, I need 5 volunteers." Well, if you don't know what you're volunteering for, don't volunteer. So we did.
Exactly.
He goes, "All right, I'm picking you, you, and you." He picks 5 of us, tells us we have to go up, pack our stuff. We're being transferred. We're getting new orders. Wait until after we're down at PAC, ready to go, and he goes, "Oh, by the way, you're going to the new trial to see about females being on the front lines."
Oh.
Waited a half an hour, then decided to tell us that he was just messing with us. But, no, if you can do it, that's great. It's power for you. But in the military, like I said in the beginning, we are not women. We're not men. We are soldiers, which is why, especially in the Army, you all look alike. You don't wear, you're not allowed to wear makeup, not allowed to wear jewelry. Your hair is tied back. So in uniform with a cover on, a hat was what we call a hat, you really can't tell if we're a man or a woman. We are equal. You have a few jerks, and I've went through the jerks. I mean, but you're going to get that anywhere that believe a woman's place is at the home cooking and cleaning, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I didn't. I had a couple bad experiences, but for the most part, I had a great time when I was in the military. I was respected. I had friends. You know, I had a great support system that, you know, I still talk to a lot of them today. And a couple buddies of mine,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have passed boot camp if it wasn't for them and for my first sergeant. Because we have the walls that we have to climb at the end. And to graduate, you have to make it over the walls. Well, I smacked my knee and messed up my knee. And so I couldn't get over it. So one grabs me and the other one pushes me and throws me basically over the wall. And then we had to finish a 10-mile run. And I had the guy, you know, my buddy was behind me helping me hold up my backpack, almost pushing me along just to keep me going just so we graduate. You know, that's where I have a hard time with the woman's movement in a sense, because I don't see man, I don't see woman, I see an equal. And I've
I think that's the whole point of it. Like, feminism doesn't mean, you know, women are superior to men. It means they're equal. And I think that's where a lot of people get confused.
Exactly. It gets misconstrued now. And it always
kind
of did a little bit, but, you know, it was literally, you look back at the times, you know, women couldn't vote. We didn't have an opinion. We were basically designed to stand a step behind the man. You know, I got divorced because of that. My ex-husband, that was the one thing he couldn't deal with me being in the military. It didn't matter if who the soldier was a man or a woman. The spouse stood behind the man.
Yeah.
And he didn't like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that was part of the reason he had problems, but it's just how it is.
Yeah, I totally get your frustration there. I mean, when I was in college, I tried to start what was called the Dorothy Day Collective. And it wound up going completely underlooked by the student government at the time, mainly because, you know, people weren't understanding what in the world I was doing. Like, I had people say, like, what the hell do you think you're doing? And I have, like, you know, like the sign of the cross, like, you know, shown at me by my friends, my male counterparts. And it was just like, these guys were friends of mine. And it was just like, yeah, I mean, and they were totally like misconstrued with that conception that, like, you know, feminism is ostensibly like, and by ostensibly, I mean like, you know, it's not like I said, like, it's not females are superior to men. It's the equality between the sexes.
Exactly. And, you know, and that's where I have a very hard time, because a lot of people look at me because, yes, as a female in the military.
Right.
And, you know, I get irritated with, you know, like the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to promote the first female flying squadron. And to me, it's like we're being put up as the pedestal as the new token. You know, like vets. Every election year, vets is a big issue. The VA is a big issue. Now it's women's, like, oh, it's all women's this, all women. It's like, really? How is that equal? We all know men and women can do almost the same thing. There's a few things we can't do, and I don't want to learn how to do it.
Well, it's not like a matter of, like, you must learn how to do this. It's more so like, you know, it's like, it's more so of a thing that's, like, never been done in history, and that's what they're commemorating.
But it didn't happen by chance. It was set up as a promotional event. That's the thing. Because when you look at the all-female squadron, they don't all belong in the same group. They're all different women that were handpicked to do it. Normally, flyovers, things like that, were done by the Blue Angels, an elite flying force that was designed for show. You have to, in a, to be in the Blue Angels, you don't, it doesn't matter if you're male or female. You have to try out. You have to have so many hours. You have to prove you belong there. It's not where you get to just do it. And they literally will handpick, they handpick certain females just to do this job for that event, to make a big publicity event out of it. That's all.
Yeah, and believe me when I say I completely get your frustration there as, like, someone, like, you know, who went through.
Hi, Derek. How are you?
Good, how are you? I was on the whole time, listening.
I know.
Hi, Derek. It's April.
Hi, April. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, so, yeah, we're just basically talking about International Women's Day and the very first of basically everything. But, and I have to ask, what does feminism mean to you?
Who are you asking?
I'm asking,
were you asking?
I was asking Derek.
Okay.
And looks like he dropped, so.
Yeah, he has sometimes has issues with his phone.
Oh,
you know,
I see.
A big part of the Women's Day, and
mm-hmm.
we haven't discussed it yet, was also to bring awareness to domestic abuse.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's actually why I coined originally the Dorothy Day Collective in college. And what people didn't understand was I was trying to bring awareness to Title IX issues. And Title IX is essentially the I forget the definition now, but it's like, and I worked in Title IX, but however, it's basically stopping domestic violence before it happens, and which I get it can kind of be inevitable depending on who you are. However, it's not something that should be glorified at all, and it's definitely not so. And that was something that was a common misconception at the college I was at the time. Because, you know, the guys were just, like, so bad about the fact that, you know, that in trigger warning for anyone, that the R word, the four-letter R word is, was very prevalent on the campus. Like, almost anyone who I've talked to, like, any girl who I've talked to has basically said, like, oh, I almost got, you know, assaulted. And I was, yeah, sorry, my cat's meowing. But,
you're good.
Yeah. However, it's definitely not, it's so not a joke. And I'm sure that, and I don't want to make assumptions, but can you speak to that, Mary, as someone who has been in the military?
Repeat that, please.
Oh, yeah, sure. So can you speak to the aspect of the of assault as someone who has been in the military?
I sort of can.
Yeah, that's okay.
Here's a double-edged sword with that. There's a lot of women who have and who have had to deal with that. I personally have never. I've been lucky.
Uh-huh.
But this is like it is in the civilian world. You have the women who actually legitimately have had been assaulted.
Uh-huh.
That don't get believed because of the fact that think of the military as basically like a college campus.
Right.
And you have women, in especially the Army, have a reputation
mm-hmm.
that you have to live down because so many women before you. And when a woman sleeps with a lot of men, and usually in their own unit, it gets around. And a lot of girls do a lot of dumb things. And they cry assault to get out of getting in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of regulations and a lot of rules. In the
right.
military, one of the only places left in the world that adultery can be punishable by court-martial.
Hmm.
Caught.
Wow. Yeah, I was not aware of that. And
yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of eye-opening. It is eye-opening, I should say. And
when it comes to the assault, a lot has to do with your superior officers and the way they handle situations.
Right.
It's certain bases have a lot of problems with it. Fort Hood is one. There's been a lot of women that have been assaulted on that base.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a few that have been killed to cover it up.
I see.
They're working, because everything in the military is done in-house.
Right.
And they're working on changing the laws. So
yeah.
It comes an out-of-house matter, so it's investigated externally so it doesn't get covered up, because it does happen.
Right. No, I hear you. I mean,
but you got to look at safety for yourself, too.
Exactly.
No.
You have to look at safety for yourself. You have to look at safety as a whole. Yeah, sorry. I have to get my cat treats really quickly.
No, you're good. Because,
so
you know, a military base is like a small town. And literally it's the escalation of some, more than some towns, actually. And so when you're out there and you're a female, you need to take care of yourself. You need to be aware. You know, there's a false sense of security, thinking you're on a base. You know, and that's why there are safety courses you go through. Take them seriously, because you're forced to go through them anyway. But take them seriously, you know.
Yes, and I recommend taking self-defense classes if you're not in the military. I mean, I remember I was working in Providence late at night, working at a TV station. And all I remember was the fact that I was just scared at night and having to basically always be on the lookout for, you know, potential assailants, I should say. But, and I remember buying pepper spray as a result because I knew no self-defense. I still don't. And, however, my mom, like when she was getting her doctorate in Philadelphia, she was a self-defense teacher, and I think that's imperative because, it's Philadelphia, not to give it a bad name. However, it is a scary city.
You know, and you brought up a good point, self-defense.
Yeah.
There are a lot of classes that are free for women, and a lot of them are actually taught by ex-military.
Mm-hmm.
I have a few friends that teach them. And
that's
fun. One thing, you know, I grew up you know, in the 80s and 90s. And
yeah.
It was, rape was high back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were always taught, and we forget this because we get into this false sense of security, you know, your keys are a very, very good weapon.
I'm sorry, did you say teeth?
Keys.
Oh, keys, sorry.
You, you know, your keys for your house, your car, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
When you carry your keys, make sure you always have one sticking out.
Gotcha.
You know, it's like we, in the same thing, you know, with, you know, law enforcement, you know, we had, there's been a trend of fake cops pulling people over, you know,
mm-hmm.
just being safety aware, you
exactly.
know, making sure that someone always knows where you're going and when you're going to be back.
Yeah. I'm sure you,
you know,
probably teach
making
your kids
sure.
the same thing too. I mean, I don't have kids, but I was always taught that growing up.
Yeah. And, you know, I was trying to stop for a minute there. Don't go to dark. Don't meet people offline.
Yeah.
In a private place. You know, things like that. And we all tend to forget, we get this mindset that it's not going to happen to us.
Mm-hmm.
And probably won't. But, you know, always be safe just to be sure. You know, ironically, I was doing a little back search on the Women's Day and the women's movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know that actually New Zealand was the first self-governing nation to allow women to vote?
Really? I didn't know that.
And ironically as it is, and I always find this ironic, but the reason why they picked March 8th was it's linked to the women's movement during the Russian Revolution.
Really? Can you talk more about that?
Yeah. So basically what it is it's a mix between every back then, we not everybody used the same calendar.
Mm-hmm.
And so when everyone starts thinking the same calendar, is why they picked the actual date of the March 8th.
Mm-hmm.
But give me 1 second.
Sure. I'll continue while you look that up real quick.
There we go.
And, yeah. And so Amelia Earhart, she was the first woman to cross the Atlantic on an airplane. In an airplane, I should say. that just reminded me of some corny joke from that show, Victorious. But she did this in 1928. And after that first trip across the ocean, which took more than 20 hours, Amelia Earhart basically became the celebrity that she was. And she won countless awards, got ticker tape parade down Broadway, wrote a best-selling book, and became an editor at Cosmopolitan. Funny how things come full circle. And in 1937, Earhart attempted to be the first female pilot to fly around the world and the first pilot of any gender to circumnavigate the globe at its widest point, the equator. And along with her navigator, Fred Noonan, Earhart successfully hopscotched from Miami to Brazil, Africa, India, and Australia. And 6 weeks after they began their journey, Earhart and Noonan left New Guinea for the U.S. territory of Howland Island, but they never arrived. So there was no trace of Earhart, Noonan, or their plane. And so it was they were basically never found. And there's this, like, conspiracy theory that, and I don't know if this is necessarily true or not, but they were put in, like, a Japanese concentration camp or something, but I don't know.
Yeah, there's a bunch of conspiracy theories on that one. There's conspiracy theories on everything. We're back into the trend that the world's flat again. So, you know, we never learned anything from Christopher Columbus, apparently. So, basically, when you look back at the Russian Revolution, it was basically another huge war for Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And so, back then, women were not allowed to get education. They got elementary school, and that was it. So a lot of the rich families sent their kids over to Europe and other countries to get educated. And then they come home, and then they get to sit and look pretty. Well, also during this period, a lot of the women that weren't married were moving away from the farm life and into the city to help in the workforce because the men were out fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the same thing that happened here during the war, our wars. And because they were women, they were looked at as lower class citizens. So they had horrible working conditions.
That's true.
And they were taught and told that you had to shut up, take it, because you're supporting the men, you're supporting the war effort.
Exactly. And this isn't just in, like, U.S. history. This is just, like, all around the world at large. However, it's like, well, I was going to say that, you know, it was basically, like, you basically had to be, like, a Christian or a Christian white male or a Christian older white male to be considered basically a citizen.
Okay, sort of.
Sort of,
you had to be a Christian, white, non-Irish male.
Oh.
Because you got to remember, the Irish were also slaves. That we tend to forget about that part.
Yeah, I completely forgot about
that. And Catholics were frowned upon.
What was that?
Catholics were frowned upon.
Oh, true, yeah. Now, why were Catholics frowned upon?
In this country?
Because
you got to remember the Catholic Church ran England.
Right, yeah, you're absolutely right about that.
That's why Martin Luther came here.
Sorry, my cat's puking. Oh, my goodness.
You're good. You can barely hear it. It freaks you out more than we hear it.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
that's
the one thing that we tend to forget about in this culture. But, you know, the one thing is, give me a minute. I can't remember what her name is. I'm going to butcher her name, so forgive me. But remember back in 2014?
Yes.
Malala Yousafzai, I think her name is pronounced correctly. Do you have any idea who she is?
Yeah, of course. She, I think everyone knows who she is, but she was the woman who stood up to the Taliban to fight for women's education. And
here's
she was shot.
The best part. She was. She's correct, but she wasn't a woman.
Wait, what?
She was 17.
Well,
she was a child.
Yeah, she was a child.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She wrote
by the
her
US
first
standards, basically.
She actually started the movement when she was 11.
Really?
She wrote. Did her first blog series explain why she was afraid And that what had to do with the war effort.
Yeah.
And afraid to go to school because of the Taliban.
Right.
Because in the Middle East, in some countries, under some rulers, women are not to be seen, not to be heard, without being escorted by a man. They literally cannot leave their house unless
right.
a man escorts them.
Yeah.
Girls do not go to school past elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
She was the winner when Len Kane was the runner-up. She was the reason he got second place for the Nobel Peace Prize that year.
Wow.
So he's okay with losing to her.
Yeah.
But, you know, the coolest thing about her is she's doing it for the reasons, and she turns down so many interviews because she doesn't want her to be what's known. She wants what's going on to be aware.
Right.
She wants things to change.
Exactly. And that's the perfect reason to do something. Yeah, because, like, I turned down being a part of Miss Rhode Island USA for the sake of actually just, like, you know, if I'm going to preach about, you know, diabetes, nutrition, women's health, et cetera, I don't want to do it wearing a tiara and being on TV and wearing a swimsuit. Like, no. Like, I'm sorry, but no. And no offense to anyone who's in a pageant out there, but it's like they train these young women basically to, you know, be seen when they can be seen on their own and for the right reason, not because of their body, not because of their, you know, physique. I know it's basically the same thing, but. Really, it's like and come to think of it, it's like when in 2021, so like kind of peak COVID, but not really, but when the world was somewhat getting back to normal, it was like I had a bit of a beer belly from the alcoholism that I went through. And my boyfriend, who I met that year, didn't care about it. I mean, he cared about what was in my brain. And yeah, it's just perfect.
See, I don't believe anything wrong with pageants.
Mm-hmm.
It's all based on what you do it for, why you do it, and who you are. There's going to be controversy no matter what you do.
Yeah.
But
no,
you know,
I believe that 100%. I mean, personally, like, I just don't want to, like, I mean, the thought of me being seen in a swimsuit is, like, scary to me. And it's, like, I don't want to be judged based on, like, how healthy, how healthy the judges perceive me to be. It's, like, hello, I have, like, a semi-broken pancreas here. I'm not exactly 100% healthy. And my brain is kind of wired weirdly, to say the least, the very least. However, it's like, do they really know if they're happy and healthy?
Then that's up to the individual. I mean, you can't control what other people do. But
right.
You got to remember, it's like Hooters. You know, people give Hooters a bad name. But do you realize that a lot of the women that work there get really good tips? I mean, you can actually come home with like $500 a night.
Right.
That pays for your college, not to mention places like the pageant itself. You get $50,000 in scholarships. That pays for almost your tuition. And you get and if you actually look at, it's changing over the years. You know, when it started, it was designed to help women. But you got to look at, you know, a lot of them have a message.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely not,
and
like,
you get the ones that just smile and go, world peace. But, you know, you have the few that do this just to have a message. And if you look at what they're going to school for, a lot of them go to school for science and technology and doctors and things that they could never do without winning these pageants.
Right. And I'm definitely not discrediting them for that. It's just like, I mean, that's just my personal take on it. But, like, being the individual in society that I am, and it's like, I mean, I embrace my femininity, but, like, not to the extent where I'm, like, showing off everything.
Oh, I believe it should be covered. It drives me nuts. When you go to the store, you can't find a dress that if you bend over, you know, the world sees everything.
Exactly.
You know, and I got a buddy of mine who's from Iraq.
Uh-huh.
And she came over here during the war. And she still wears her hijab.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's her
choice.
And
she wears it for one reason and one reason only.
Which is?
Because she is absolutely gorgeous. She goes, and she works in a field of mostly men. She goes, I want people to hear what I have to say, not what I look like. I want them to judge what I'm saying being a dumb idea. Because it's a dumb idea, not it being, you know, well, it's dumb because you're a girl, or because it's a great idea because you're pretty, even though it's the stupidest idea in the world.
Yeah. Yeah,
and on that...
Yes. So at the end of the day, it really is your choice of whether you choose to embrace your femininity or not. But I would say just do it with class and do it with the utmost respect that you have for yourself. And we're a minute left. So is there any closing thoughts?
Remember where you came from. Remember all the women that fought for the reasons for you to have the freedoms you got. You know, the one thing we didn't mention we're going to mention today in our afternoon show, is Rosie the Riveter.
Yes.
And all the women that left their lives to work for the war efforts.
Exactly. Thank you for bringing that up today.
Remember, no matter what, be you and who you are and who you want to be. Because in the end, you're not going to be a happy person unless you are happy with you.
Yep. And with that, we are out of
don't
time.
Don't be who you think everybody wants you to be.
Yep. Okay, we are out of time, so bye for now.